We end this week and this hour noting what we learned at the beginning of the program. The worst refugee crisis in 20 years. 45 million people living in places they never planned to live. Refugees displaced by war, politics, poverty, and climate change. The transition from citizen to refugee can be sudden, but could there be more planning devoted to where people end up when they are displaced? We were all reminded at the beginning of this hour that it is a minority of refugees who live in the classic refugee camps that we've seen. Most try to get by in shelters within existing cities. Well, the IKEA Foundation, the philanthropic wing of the retailer, thinks this could be an opportunity, not for its furniture business, but to use its expertise in developing low-cost design solutions for consumers to do the same for displaced people. In partnership with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, IKEA is rolling out a new easy-to-transport, durable, and easy-to-assemble lodging solution for refugees. With us now is Greg Hodgen. He's the founder of Peace Building Solution, which also aims to produce better refugee community design and management approaches. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here, John.
This application of design to the question of displaced people has been going on for a while. What are the kinds of needs that you're beginning to address, and how is design helping to improve the lot of displaced persons?
Well, that's a good question, John. The issue that we actually see is the fact that a lot of refugees are in a more protracted scenario. Most people think that refugees go to a camp or they're there for a couple of years and they go home again, and that's just simply not the case anymore. Especially after the end of the Cold War, the fact of the matter is that a lot of these refugees are stuck in these camps for a long time. We're talking on the average of 7 to 8 years, sometimes more. There's a camp in Kenya right now that actually has 500,000 refugees living there, and most of them have been there since the mid-1990s. So the fact of the matter is that all of these issues, all of these problems that you see become compounded over time. A lot of these people become hopeless. They feel like they're not going anywhere. They feel that no one's taking care of them. They feel like they're only getting the basic needs taken care of. They'll get their food taken care of and their water and things of that nature, but that will save your life, but it doesn't really prepare you for the future. So what we're looking to do is actually to take a more long-term holistic approach to engage in not just the shelters, the water, the sanitation, the bread and butter, if you will, but also education, healthcare, adult employment opportunities so that people can get back up on their feet and leave and don't have to come back again.
Can you actually design a community or anticipate a community that has all those features, including education and employment?
Yes and no. You can lay out the bread and butter, yes, but one of the things you have to do is you must work with the local populations in question. And a lot of people think that there's this one-size-fits-all approach to refugee communities, and there's simply not. One of the things that we usually do before we go out into the field is we actually do research with the community itself and ask them if they actually want us to help them. Just because you have this wonderful new technology that can do whatever you want it to do doesn't mean the local population is going to actually accept it. So you have to make sure that you work with the people on the ground in question to ensure that they want you there, first of all. Secondly, that you're giving them what they actually want and what they actually need. Because just because we come in with the resources doesn't mean that we know everything about what's going on. In fact, more often than not, I've heard from experts in the field, and I've seen it myself, everyone walks in with this beautiful, well-executed plan, and they walk into the field, and they take the book and throw half of it away because some of it just simply doesn't work. There are lessons you can learn, but you have to take it as each individual circumstance is a new thing to do, a new issue, a new community to work with.
How does design help the majority of displaced persons who actually find their own ways in existing cities? They aren't actually going to camps at all or the makeshift facilities that the United Nations puts up there. They're trying to find a place in you know, some neighborhood in an existing city.
What they usually do is that when it comes to design perspective, that you can't help with the shelters, but you can help with finding them employment. You can help them finding education. You can get them food. You can get them ration cards, things of that nature. Because when it comes to urban situations especially, the fact of the matter is that they do sometimes have shelter. One of the big ones is actually in Malaysia. The Rohingya people who live in Malaysia at this point in time, a large number of them, very persecuted minority, most of them are urban refugees. And they'll pack themselves into apartments that have 30, 40 people at a time because they have nowhere else to go and the government doesn't want them to go anywhere else. So when it comes to those situations, design isn't as useful It's more of the execution, the implementation of other projects. When you're building camps out in the field, though, when you're building communities out in the field, that's when you can really sit down and design what you really want to go with, where you really want to go. Where do you put the school? Where does the community want the school? Where does the community want the clinic? Where does the community want the church? Things of that nature. When it comes to urban refugees, it's a bit more difficult, and it's a bit more taxing on the organizations in question.
In the communities that you're talking about, is it always a grid where everything's laid out in a line? How do the spaces between the tents or shelters, if this IKEA thing takes off, how do those spaces become roads and you know, wayfinding for people as this becomes a real community?
The thing is that the community becomes organic over time. As people grow and as the community grows, people start treating certain shelters in certain places. A lot of my work I've actually done in Haiti, and Haiti is an internally displaced person scenario. There are 320,000 internally displaced persons still in Haiti after the earthquake, and you see the camps grow organically. You see this shelter is not a place that you live. This is the cooking shelter. This is where we do all the cooking at, and and that's where we do that. And then this shelter is the clinic, and then this shelter is the school. And the community just kind of grows organically. They grow with respect to that, and they actually designate where they want things to go. And when you allow them to do that, they accept it a lot more, and they appreciate what you're doing a lot more as well. So it really does become an organic growth. This road all of a sudden becomes a road, or this one's not a road, and this is a runoff place, or we put the latrines here, so we'll put the school on the other side of the latrines, or something to that effect. So it becomes a very organic growth over time, depending on how long the refugees or the IDPs are actually staying.
What about kids, places for kids, playgrounds, toys, just leisure activity outside of schools?
That's actually one of the things that Peacebuilding Solutions is actually looking to address, and we've actually found a fascinating new technology that we're very excited to actually talk to the NGO. They're working on, and I'm not making this up, this is absolutely amazing, they're actually working on a soccer ball that kids can kick around. So, you know, you give them a soccer field and they kick it around, and inside the soccer ball is a power source that they charge while they're kicking it. So at night, you can take the power source out of the soccer ball and charge a cell phone or charge a pump or maybe a light at night or something to that effect. So in essence, while the kids are playing, you can actually take this new technology and recharge things down the road, which is absolutely fascinating. But the most important thing for kids, and this is universal everywhere, no matter where you go, is you got to keep them in school. When you see kids going through the slums, or you see kids in these refugee communities and they're not in the schools, they're not learning anything, and most importantly, especially when they get to middle school age, 10, 12, 13, they start joining gangs, they start getting in trouble, and that leads to crime, mm-hmm. at least increased crime. By putting them in school and by keeping them in school, by making sure that you have the school program running, you not only take care of the kids present, but you also allow this culture and that society to build its future as well.
Using design to make camps into actual communities. Greg Hodgson
exactly.
is founder of Peacebuilding Solutions, which aims to build better refugee communities through design and management approach. If you had to leave home tomorrow, what would you take with you, Greg?
A lot of money. a lot of money, and probably, I hate to say it, but I'd probably take myself and my laptop because it's got a bunch of stuff on it. And to be honest, in the field, you could easily sell that stuff for a lot of money as well. Money is one of the most important things to take.
That's Greg's idea. What would you take if you had to leave tomorrow? 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend, folks. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.